quite one-fourth, and never just half, but the entirety of one primate, whole. It is the part of a story, an idea that means more to you than me. Hello and welcome to Full Gorilla Life. We are Jeremy Keene,
Larry Medina,
and Corey Hewlings.
Each week, we will break down an important life concept or talk with an inspiring person so that you can live your full gorilla life. All right, welcome back to the show. We have a phone-in guest today, Adam Velasco, a mortgage officer. He's been in financial banking and just financial services all around. And we wanted to bring him on, and we kind of wanted to touch base with everything going on with the coronavirus and how people are acting and reacting, I should say. So welcome to the show, Adam. We're glad to have you on.
Great. Thanks for having me, guys. Excited to be on.
So before we start, we're going to throw you through the gauntlet and get to know you a little bit.
All right, Adam, you ready?
All right.
You ready?
Good.
All right.
I am ready.
Married or single?
Single.
Any children?
Yes, I have one 14-year-old son named Noah.
Nice. City you live in?
I'm sorry?
City you live in?
Oh, Knoxville, Tennessee.
Knoxville, Tennessee. All right. Are you an iPhone or an Android guy?
I am an iPhone guy.
Have you always been an iPhone guy?
No, actually, I was an Android guy through about the Galaxy 7, and then switched over for work. And once you switch over to Apple, you can't switch back.
It's over.
I don't know why.
It's the dark side.
They
hook you. They hook you. All right. Favorite movie or book?
I feel like I know the answer to this one.
Favorite movie is Shawshank Redemption.
Okay.
Wait. Hold on one second. Why do you know his favorite movie was Shawshank Redemption?
Because it was out when we were in college and that we watched it all the time. Am I right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, wow. I mean, that's, I knew that's it. Exactly
we've,
right.
We used to quote it. Like, you know how you throw quotes out. Like, so we.
Yeah, listen, it's a great movie. It's definitely top five all time for me, but like, I was amazed that
that Jeremy knew.
Another man's favorite movie.
Jeremy, like, do you know your wife's favorite movie?
Yeah.
Okay.
What is it?
Notebook.
That's just like a cliche. That's not even her favorite movie.
He's making it up.
Adam, don't believe that. All right. Just Adam, know this, that Jeremy knows your favorite movie, but not his wife.
I do. Yeah. It's the Notebook.
Okay. Please note it.
There's other ones too, but we'll stick with the Notebook.
I am actually having a little bit of a difficult time hearing you guys.
Okay.
Okay.
Right. Probably when we all talk together is probably worse. What I was explaining was just know that Jeremy knows your favorite movie, but does not know his wife's.
It's kind of weird.
Well,
that's not true.
Wow.
We'll go with it.
Wow.
All right.
I don't exactly know how to feel about that.
Yeah. Well,
I would feel weird, Adam, but that's just me. Listen. All right. So favorite genre of music and
he was going to go with a book. We interrupted him.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, too. Adam. Favorite book.
Oh, yeah. Favorite book, Three Painted Deserts by Donald Miller.
What is that? What is that about?
It's about Donald Miller when he was probably just short of graduating college, like right around, late teens, early 20s. He went from Houston, Texas, up to Washington State with a friend, and basically the book is the recap of that. It has my favorite chapter in all of books in it, and it's just called Night Golf. They went to visit a friend in California, and the guy worked at a driving range, and they broke into the driving range and hit golf balls at each other over the lake.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
So is this like a true story then?
Yes. Yeah. Uh-huh. It's a nonfiction work by him, and just kind of tells the story of that journey.
So
he's also the guy that wrote Blue Like Jazz.
Okay. Yeah. Is he like a musician, or is he just somebody who like an entrepreneur? Or
no. He was. I found him because I had read Blue Like Jazz at the recommendation of a friend. And then went to see what else that he wrote.
Okay.
And so found found through Painted Deserts, and it's one of two books that I make sure to read every year.
Oh, wow.
Oh, okay. Wow. Now, do you feel you get something out of it every time that you read it?
I'm sorry?
Do you feel that you get something out of it every time that you read it?
Yeah, I really do. Because there's a whole, I guess, existential journey that Miller goes on through his actual journey. And it speaks really well to literally kind of any point you are in your life. You can pick something up because he's moving from one thing to another. Even if that thing he's moving to is kind of that ethereal unknown kind of thing, because he doesn't really know. He just has a destination in mind. He doesn't know exactly what he's going to do when he gets there.
Okay. I can appreciate that. All right. So, favorite genre of music?
I like them all. I can't do the, what I refer to as like bro country stuff. But I'm really into,
that's Larry's favorite genre.
Well, what was weird is that Keen was mouthing, not bro country.
No.
I'm really leaning into kind of Americana, the Lone Bellow, Brandi Carlile, that sort of thing.
Okay. Are those newer bands?
I'm sorry?
What were the bands again?
The Lone Bellow. They're a trio based out of Nashville, and then, you know, Brandi Carlile.
I've never listened to them. I like Americana, but I'll have to check them out.
Definitely check them out. Just released a new album. It's pretty great.
Okay, cool.
All right, Adam, are you a reservation or just walk-in kind of guy?
Oh, I'm a walk-in kind of guy, and sit at the bar too.
Okay.
Always get better service at the bar.
Did you do that with Jeremy or no?
So we're going out.
Well, listen, Adam. Here's the thing: is that Jeremy's the only guy in here that's reservation. So we mess them. Right.
I like that we get right to just the reservation. There's like more to it, but
that's okay. Here and there. All right, Adam. Favorite type of food?
I'm sorry.
Favorite type of food?
Favorite type of food? I'm eating a lot of Asian noodle dishes right now.
Okay.
That's kind of what I'm cooking a lot and eating a lot of.
So now you cook it too?
Like ramen?
Yeah, no, not like ramen.
I got cup of noodle. I mean, is that the same thing?
There's some of that. there's some of the ramen, of course.
I like that blue one.
No, one of the things I'm cooking a lot of now is the sweet and spicy pork sambal noodles. So
are you making your own noodles fresh or no?
The noodles, no.
Okay.
Just the other stuff that goes in them.
Yeah, because the reason why I asked that is because I have two friends who are actually doing that now with Kaika and Tom. Mm-hmm. Where they're just,
oh wow,
yeah, they're actually like making noodles fresh, and they're trying their hand at trying to make that happen.
But that ramen broth, you make the broth and everything that goes with the noodles then, I guess?
Yeah, I sure do.
That's awesome.
What is sweet and spicy? I don't think I've ever had sweet and spicy noodles.
Okay, so what goes in this one, I mean, there's pork and basil, and then that sambal chili paste. Okay. That you can get at the store, and then literally the sweet in it is some sugar.
Okay.
To just balance out all of the spice.
Right on. It sounds good.
It's not like sweet and sour sauce. Oh, it's terrific.
And what city are you outside of, you're living in right now? Knoxville, you said?
Yeah, I'm in Knoxville, Tennessee.
Okay, so if I'm in Knoxville, where should I definitely eat?
If you're in Knoxville, what now?
Where should I definitely eat?
Where should you definitely... Oh, if you're in Knoxville, you need to eat at either Knox Mason, which is Southern farm-to-table type stuff, or Stock and Barrel, which it originated here, but they've got one in Nashville now, has won Best Burger in both Knoxville and Nashville.
I feel like that's where I'm going if I...
Yeah.
Stock and Barrel.
There's okay. Farm to table sound. I love it farm does, to yeah, table.
That's
though.
True.
Yeah, no, that's good. All right. So Adam, what do you drive?
I drive a Nissan Maxima with about a quarter of a million miles on it.
Nice. That's what I like to hear. Yeah. That's right down my alley.
I can appreciate that. Financial advisor.
Yes.
And beer, whiskey, or wine? All?
I would say yes.
or bourbon.
But definitely, if gun to my head had to choose one, I'm going to choose the bourbon.
Okay. Now, do you have a favorite type of bourbon?
I do. It's the E.H. Taylor small batch bourbon.
All right. I'm going to write that down because me and a buddy of mine are getting into that. So E.H. Taylor?
E.H. Taylor.
All right.
Small batch.
Do they make it with cinnamon?
I'm not even going to dignify that.
Yes.
I appreciate that.
Larry's trying to become a bourbon snob like there's other people out there on YouTube.
I'm sticking with my Fireball.
I'll drink a Fireball. You saw me. All right.
Anyway.
All right. Yeah. Adam, now we did have you on here for a reason, not just ask you ridiculous, stupid questions.
That wasn't bad. What are we?
Yeah, okay, just stop.
11 minutes in. It's not bad.
Okay. So the coronavirus and the world is ending and the stock market is crashing. And what should we or should we not be doing with our money right now?
We'll
be back in 20 minutes to hear the end. Just go ahead.
In general, it's kind of like everybody's saying about every part of this. You want to be smart, but don't panic. We've lost. I mean, the stock market today closed at just under 20,000. To put it in perspective, that's actually a little bit higher than it was 4 years ago after the election.
Okay.
So we've lost some gains, but we are by no means in a place to really panic because it's so completely volatile at the moment. I mean, even though it's lost, the other day it did just go up 1,000. You know what I mean? I mean, every movement like that is only about a 5% movement of it, which the numbers sound huge, but you know, I'm 42. So I remember being a kid and hearing on the news, you know, that the Dow Jones closed up today with a total number of, you know, 8,000, you know, or even lower than that. And so when you hear that it moved 1,000 points in a day, a lot of us want to freak out because it sounds like a lot, but that's a 5% move.
Now,
you know what I mean? It's not this.
Yeah. Now, if I am 65 years old and I'm getting ready to retire, what would you say to that person?
I'm sorry, say that again.
Yeah. So if I'm at retirement age and I'm getting ready to retire, what would you say to that person?
Well, if you're at retirement age and you're getting ready to retire, you probably, if with a good financial advisor, you had already moved at least a decent portion of your money out of the market if you were going to need to count on it for income into safer investments, be that gold, real estate, you know, bonds, whatever. If you were keeping a bunch in to try and ride this, you know, then keep the money in and wait for it to come back. Because it's going to come back. The stock market always comes back. I mean, it's, I can show you a graphs from when it started to now, and it's going to look like the steep face of a mountain. With some, even the Great Depression, which was 4 years long, looks like a little blip when you look at
in the grand scheme of things, if you will.
Yeah.
And so that's the biggest thing. The market recovers, and the market in the last about 4 years has been incredibly resilient and almost not as affected as everyone believed it was going to be by the different things going on in the world. When we were starting to have the tariff issues, you had a couple of down days.
Right.
But, you know, it ends up finishing the week closing higher than it ever has.
Adam, I'm assuming that you're referring to the trade war with China?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So all that to say, especially the current state of the market, it's volatile, and yes, we've seen some losses over the past about week and a half. But you know, the good news, the good takeaway there is it hasn't lost all of its gains in the last 5 years yet.
So,
B, it's proven to be resilient. I think the stock market may be the first thing to actually start to come back. As soon as we get some good indicators, people start buying again, and it'll rise again.
Do you think it's time to buy now, or do you think it's going to go lower?
I would be buying now.
Because I see a lot of these, like,
maybe not if you've got money that you didn't have in, I don't know that I'd put all of it back in just yet, because it may go down some more, but you're still getting incredible value right now.
Yeah. Well, we were just talking about this before we called you, Adam. I am flush with $100 right now. So, where should I put that $100? Where should I put that in the stock market?
Or they're talking about stimulus package. Where would you recommend them putting the stimulus into this if they can float it?
If Mr. Trump signs me a check tomorrow for whatever amount of money, and I could just put that into the stock market, should I do that?
I don't know what it's like where you guys are, but probably your best bet for $100 is investing in toilet paper. Because here in a week or so, you're probably going to be having people offer you their children for toilet paper.
Yeah,
that's true. They're even taking baby wipes off the shelves. Like, they had a limit on that because people are taking away from that.
Yeah, it is pretty crazy. No, but on a serious note, I have looked at a lot of, like, big companies, and some industries are obviously hit harder than harder than others. Like, we were just talking about the cruise industry being down, looks like 80% over the last, week?
Right. It hasn't
2 weeks,
been that long,
you know? The airline industry, what'd you say, Larry, JetBlue was at $13 or $17?
Yeah,
that's
pretty low.
We looked at Royal Caribbean was like $20, down from like 140 or
something like that. Yeah.
I think your blue chip in the service industry is where you're going to want to put your money in while it's low, because those will come back. Cruise lines will be slower. Airlines should be pretty quick. Because once they let or kind of give you the all clear on traveling again, it's, you know, cruise lines are kind of dependent on disposable income and things of that nature, which, depending on how long, you know, people are working from home and revenues are down and everything like that, disposable income may not ramp up right away.
But yeah, that's a good point.
Work travel will go off the charts as soon as
they
say, hey.
Yeah, that's another good point, because Larry had actually brought up that, you know, maybe it was Jeremy brought up that, you know, there might be some type of bailout or assistance from the government, but all those cruise lines are like offshore, like in other countries. So I can't imagine that we're going to be bailing them out very much.
No. The government will absolutely prop up the airline industry, at least the domestic carriers. I mean, Delta, United,
Southwest.
They already put so much money into them anyways. Like, they can't.
Right.
Yeah, you can't let it fail.
Yeah.
Right. So those, like I said, those kind of blue chip airlines or service industry type things that are taking a hit now, they'll kind of be the first ones to recover. Because there's a built-in market. I mean, once everybody can travel again, everybody's going to feel good about buying Delta stock, because Delta's back on course. so to speak.
Yeah. Now, before we get really into like investments and what we should buy, what do you think are the going to be the long-term effects of this whole coronavirus financially?
I think one, there's a very good chance that it will deplete some of the savings percentages that the American workforce has, or in some cases doesn't have. We're not in general a nation of savers as it is.
Right.
And where you're going to have a lot of folks, you know, needing to dip into what they do have because hours have been cut or, you know, any number of things that are happening because of this, the percentage of saved wealth will go down. And so you're going to see, with that, you're going to probably see less larger purchases and everything like that. You're going to have to see automakers are probably going to have to make some concessions. You're going to see cars get cheaper. You're going to see those big ticket items are going to have to become less expensive because there's not going to be as much disposable income to pay for them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could see that.
That's a good point.
Now,
if you just bought a brand new truck, you missed the mark.
Yeah. And that would be me. That would be me. But by same token, if you're the kind of person who pays extra on your mortgage, now is not the time to do that. Am I inaccurate in thinking that?
I would agree with that. Now I will admit that I have as I did primarily mortgages, or have done primarily mortgages for about the last 13 years. And my philosophy on home equity and making extra mortgage payments and stuff like that is probably a little bit different. I think equity in your home is terrific. Don't get me wrong, but you can't eat equity in your home. You can't. And so to me, you know, especially with rates where they are, I mean, you're consistently, historically, rates are super low. I mean, you're supposed to feel good about a mortgage interest rate if it's below 6. And about 2 weeks ago, we had a 15-year rate post at 2.75 fixed for 15 years.
So speaking to mortgages, you know, in that regard, Adam, like I know a lot of people, we have a buddy who's already looked into it of possibly refinancing. Do you see that as being beneficial for a lot of people right in this moment? Like whether they go from 30 to 15 or just refinance a 30 to a cheaper interest rate for 30?
Absolutely. I mean, it's always worth looking at. And basically right now your 30-year rates are going to be right around 4 is kind of where they ended the day. There was a big price, we call a price decrease. So prices got worse today towards the end of the day. But even still, you're talking about, you know, 3.875 or 4 on a 30-year. It's a really good time in general to borrow money, especially if you have equity in a home to facilitate it. That's where a lot of people can artificially have the savings that maybe they don't have. Because if you do have equity in the home, you can go get a zero closing cost home equity loan and have the ability to tap that equity in your home. Or if you've still got a 4.5% interest rate, you can go and get, you know, maybe go from a 30 to a 15, save yourself $500 a month, and still be paying off your house faster.
So if I was going in to refinance a mortgage, what would have to be the difference in interest rate that you think would be worth it? Like, would it be a whole point? Would it have to be like a smaller than that or larger than that? Or is that just going to vary from client to client?
It varies from client to client, because basically what a good loan officer is going to do is they're going to say, okay, it's going to cost you this much money to do this refinance. Okay. Whether that is rolling the closing costs into the loan so that you don't have to come up with it out of pocket, or you not wanting to increase your loan balance, so you write a check for the closing costs, whatever. Okay. It's going to cost you, you know, this much money to do it. What you then do is you sit down and you say, okay, it's $1,000 divided by the $50 a month I'm going to save, you know, and so it's going to take to recoup my cost. Well, if you know that you're not going to leave the home or have to refinance the home in that number of months, it's a good deal.
Okay.
That makes sense.
But if you don't know, you know, like if that number ends up being, okay, it's going to take you 26 months to recoup the closing cost number. Well, gosh, you know, we were thinking of moving in a year. Well, then don't do it. You know,
yeah.
Because at that point, but if you're like, gosh, we're in our forever home in the city that we want to live in, well, then it almost doesn't matter if it takes you 72 months to recoup it, because you still have a long-term gain on it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that makes sense.
Yeah, I guess for me, it would just be the unknown, you know, if I'm ever going to pack up and sell everything and live out of a van.
Which is a dream. Which is a dream, Adam.
Adam, my question is, yes. I got bamboozled into my last loan, and I didn't put a full 20% down. I put like, I don't know, 19.5%. And I'm going to leave numbers out of it, but I ended up spending a lot more on my house than what I originally planned on it. We built a house.
Yeah.
So I opted for fancy appliances instead of the other 0.5%. So I came out of pocket and bought fancy appliances. Well, then they're like, well, you got to pay PMI, you know? So I paid the PMI, but the loan person told me that it would come off at 80%. But then now they're telling me it's 78%. Now, mind you, after we moved into the house, I put a lot more money into the house by building a pool. So I know the appraisal's going to come back much, much higher than what they're saying my loan value is. But the appraisal fee that they want to charge me doesn't make sense for me to pay it. Does that make sense? Because
versus the PMI.
Because now I'm at 79% loan to value of their original value, which is again a ridiculous number, you know. But they're saying they won't remove it until it's at 78% or I pay for the appraisal. But the way I read the Home Buyers Protection Act or whatever it is, the federal act. It says that they can remove it and that they may request an appraisal, but they don't have to. It just says that they may request an appraisal. So am I
correct
in saying this is the bank's decision or the credit union that I'm dealing with? It's their decision whether they remove it or not, because they're trying to sell me like this is a federal act. And I'm like, I read over the federal act pretty good. Like, I'm not like an average consumer just going to take your word for it. Like, I'm going to actually pull out the act and read over it. And it sounds like they're trying to sell me something that's not true. Am I correct in believing that?
Depending on with all MI, whether it's PMI, which is going to be on a conventional loan, or whether it's the MIP that's on an FHA.
It's PMI.
There is a hard drop-off loan-to-value percentage on every one of them, okay, that it absolutely has to drop off, provided that it has reached that loan-to-value percentage of the original appraisal.
So that's the 78% mark.
Correct.
That's when it has to drop off by federal law.
Yes. Now, what they can do, and where the may is coming in, is you can ask them to reevaluate the house at any time you want to after a year. It's usually at least a year, sometimes it's two.
Yes.
And if they agree to it, yeah, you've got to pay for the appraisal. If you're trying to take advantage of things that you've done to the house or just the, your market improving.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's usually a year too.
Yeah. I'm actually over the 2 year mark or right at the 2 year mark. I'm a massive improvement with, you know, the outdoor space and the in-ground pool and all that kind of stuff. But then the market's improved too, you know? So my point is like, whenever I factor in the appraisal and how low the PMI is, cause I'm so close anyways. Now, mind you, when I put the pool in, I was only like 1% away from, or, you know, like less than a percent away from the 80% mark. And I was I was told it dropped off at 80%. So then when I called, they actually sent me a letter saying, hey, you can request that the PMI be removed at 80%. So I requested in writing, just like it says to do. And of course, nobody ever gets back to me or says anything about it, you know, and then I call them and, you know, and there's a big runaround and it's... I mean, at one point I was told that I had to be down to 72% loan to value of original appraisal. And I mean, all kinds of answers are thrown around. And this is at the headquarters in the mortgage office. This isn't like at a branch or anything like that. So, and I'm getting looks from my fellow co-host over here because I feel like
it's like a consult. It's like a free consulting service. Yeah,
well, they feel like I just air my grievances with people. So no, I was just, my thought was like when I was reading it, it's not,
wrap it up.
It's not a federal law that says that they can't drop it off at 80%, right?
No, it's not a federal law that says they can't drop it off at 80%. The federal law is the, whatever that drop dead percentage is, once it hits that,
yes,
it has to come off.
Yeah, so they can drop it off at any point that they want to. It's their choice whether they hold it or not. Yeah. And this was my argument for the loan, you know, the whoever I was talking to, the, you know, the mortgage person at the headquarters. Yeah. I said, you know, you're willing to lose me over $800? Like, you know, on a 2 year, you know, over 2 years, actually almost 3 years if you count the construction, you know, payments and stuff like that, you know, on a never late. I mean, yeah. I pay much more than that in interest a month. Like, you're willing to lose me over that? I mean, it's better for me to refi now anyways, and I'm certainly not going to look at you guys. I mean, that was my thought process behind it, but, you know.
They said we don't care.
Yeah, and that's a small credit union too. I mean, they're not small, but they're,
it's weird.
You know? I just felt like that was odd to lose me over $800.
Yeah, and I mean, there could be other layers there. You know, me not knowing. I mean, if they kept the money and kept the servicing or whatever, but there's also the chance that they kind of sold it. They may have retained servicing. You may still make your payments to them, but you know, they may be tied because of what.
They claim they didn't.
Their investor.
You know, they claim they didn't, but also they tried claiming that it's a federal law that, you know, because I don't know the federal law, because I don't know federal mortgage laws because I'm not a mortgage broker.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean I can't go read the federal law, you know?
Right. There's no federal law saying that it can't come off.
Yeah.
Literally at any point.
Yeah, I explained that to her. That seemed kind of groundbreaking for the mortgage officer, but maybe, I don't know. Maybe. Anyways, there's my grievance. I'm going to stop so that Jeremy quits falling asleep over here.
Oh, hey. Hey, guys. But it's all relative, though. It's relative to what we're talking about, really, so it makes sense.
Yeah, well, I mean, we're talking about refinance, et cetera. So... Now that we are in this where we are, and we're talking about buying earlier, when you talk about buying and we're talking about stocks, right? You could actually buy stocks in your portfolio for your 401. Am I accurate in that?
Yes. Yeah. And that's actually, the biggest thing I would advise people to do is get with whoever their retirement planner is and kind of double down on your retirement account. That are invested in the market right now, because you're going to get more bang for your buck going forward.
So when you say double down, do you mean put more in or have them move some stuff around?
Yeah. I mean, both? If you can put more in and move it around to places that are going to see recovery faster, you know, it just depends on how your particular advisor works with your 401k or IRA or you know, whatever retirement vehicle you have. But that's typically, for most people, that's their retirement accounts have the largest investment horizon of all of their accounts. Okay, meaning they're going to it's going to be longer for most people before they start touching that money than it will any of their other investments. And so now's a good time to get really good value for those longer gestating accounts like retirement accounts.
Gotcha. Okay. Right on.
Now, I do hear a couple of things being thrown around all the time with bull market, bear market. Can you explain what that means?
Sure. Bull market is just typically your up market.
Okay.
It's basically a bull market is what we've seen over the last 5 years up until the end of February.
Okay.
Now there have been signs. There were signs before the coronavirus and everything like that we were going to segue into a bear market. And a bear it's not necessarily a down market. I mean, a lot of times it is, but it doesn't mean bear doesn't mean losses all the time. Bear means slower growing. Because again, like we talked about, the stock market over time is still growing. It either just grows slowly or it grows quickly. There's always value to be had in every type of market, including bear market. Even in a bear market, there are still stocks that go up. You know, there are still companies that do well and pay dividends and do all of those things. It's just on your advisor to know enough about the market and read the signs. And, you know, maybe diversification is probably a bigger deal in a bear market than it is a bull market.
Now, do you recommend people invest in the stock market by themselves? Like, I know there's a bunch of apps out there now where I can buy stock.
Like E-Trade?
Robinhood and E-Trade and all these, you know.
Yeah, and Acorns. And,
yeah.
Yes and no.
I mean, let's remember, Adam, I'm flush with $100. So I don't know how many. I don't remember. I don't know how many financial advisors are going to take me on.
By the way, he puts a pinky up to his mouth when he says that every time.
Awesome powers.
If that's an itch that a particular investor needs to scratch, I understand that if they want to be in control, but I would never ever recommend that someone have complete and total control of funds that are going to be used for their retirement or something like that, because it's next to impossible for anyone to be completely dispassionate about their own money.
Yeah.
And so you're much more prone to panic. You're much more prone to, you know, all of the bad things that can happen when human nature takes hold because it's yours.
That makes sense.
Go ahead.
Now I would, the financial advisor firm that I used to work at, we had several clients that had a small percentage of their money that they would refer to kind of as their fund money, you know, and they would, it would be completely self-directed. And that, you know, it was enough to keep them happy and engaged, but the dispassionate professional was guiding the bulk of their money.
I got you. So maybe leave your retirement with somebody else, but if you want to invest
your $100, you can keep the $100 to yourself.
I could, right now I could buy 5 shares of Royal Caribbean.
Boom. that would be awesome. That would be awesome. Now, how does somebody actually find a good financial advisor if they don't live in Knoxville, Tennessee?
I would honestly, it's one of those that word of mouth recommendation works great. And so does, and it sounds ridiculous and simple, but so does just Googling, you know, wealth advisors in whatever area you're in, because believe it or not, people that are savvy enough to have good investment professionals working with them take the time to do things like write Google reviews, because it's dealing with something that's important to them. I would typically, personally, I would look for someone, especially if you have retirement accounts or accounts in probably, let's say, in the aggregate of $200,000 or more, I would look at someone that works on a fee basis as opposed to a transaction basis. And basically what that means is that wealth manager gets paid a set percentage on the total amount of your portfolio over the course of the year, regardless of how many trades they make, regardless of how many times they meet with you or anything like that. You know, they could trade 100 times in a month for you, and it doesn't cost you any more that month.
Now, what is a for that kind of a service? What is a fair percentage typically?
It's usually they're usually tiered based on, but I mean, the average I'm going to say is probably between 0.75% and 1%.
Okay. Now,
of the total worth of your portfolio.
Okay. And so is, would that transaction base, would that be like a fiduciary or no?
The non-transaction based, that type, the fee based is a fiduciary relationship.
Okay.
So Adam,
no, go ahead. I'll let you finish.
With the fiduciary relationship, they are bound and legally required to do what is in the best interest of the client. That's another reason why I prefer that mode of financial advisor. The transaction-based payment are not fiduciary. Their burden of proof is a little less. It's what is appropriate. Is it appropriate? So if there's one that maybe they earn a higher commission on that is still appropriate, they can put you into that as opposed to the other one. If they're the fee-based and fiduciary advisor, they have to put you in the one that is best for you, regardless of what might do for the company.
Yeah, I feel like the transaction-based, they're in it for themselves, and if they're in the other way, they're in it for you. Well, at least that's kind of the way it kind of comes off. Doesn't mean they are, but that's kind of the way.
Yeah, and that's a part of it. Now you've got folks in some of the transaction-based companies that just so happens to be how they have to make their money, you know. But yeah, the fiduciary, the RIA type advisors, like I said, are we're bound by law to be there and do what is best for their client.
Adam, I just want to point out that Larry just wanted to like throw out that he knew the word fiduciary, emphasize on the douchiary side of that. That was all that was about. Okay. I appreciate the knowledge that you imparted on us.
Yeah. I mean, I appreciate what he did for us.
Yes. But Larry just wanted to throw out that he knew a financial word. He Googled that before he got on.
Is that better than airing grievances?
Larry. I'm going to go with Larry. Yes. He's getting a little jabby, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. I have to wake people up.
Don't get me wrong.
I have to wake people up, Adam.
I appreciate the underhanded softball lob to go into the fiduciary. So that's fun.
You're welcome. You're welcome, sir. Yeah, I read one book. I think I know something. I know nothing, though.
Oh, honestly. I agree with that.
Yeah, yeah, 100%.
Adam, before we let you go, we'd like to get a piece of advice from you for our listeners. If there's one something that you could tell our listeners to impart on them, what would that be? Okay, I'm sorry, Adam. Let me restate this for the
radio edit.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, all right.
Okay.
Take two.
Take two, Adam. Based on your life experiences, what is one piece of advice that you can impart on our listeners?
With everything that's going on, I guess the biggest thing, especially in the financial world, is just don't panic. Everything will return to normal. Our markets are resilient. They always have been. So don't panic.
And if you can, invest.
Now is the time.
All right.
Adam, is there anywhere that our listeners can find you for some financial advice in the future?
Yeah, absolutely. You can find me on both Instagram and on Twitter at Adam M. Velasco.
V-E-L-A-S-C-O?
That is correct.
Awesome.
All right, guys, you need a mortgage or some financial advice, make sure you check them out. Find them on Instagram and Twitter there.
Yep. Adam, thank you so much for joining.
Doing mortgages in all 50 states, Puerto Rico, and Guam.
All right, guys, make sure you check them out. Adam, again, we appreciate you coming on.
Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it. Have a good evening.
As always, guys, you got any questions, comments, or concerns, you can email us at fullgorillalife@gmail.com.
And if you see what's going on with us on social media, you can find us on Facebook and Instagram at Full Gorilla Life and on Twitter at Gorilla Full.
And visit our website, fullgorilla.life. And please hit subscribe on your podcast app of choice.
Later.
Take care.